Okay, we'll begin on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. First of all, welcome myself and everybody else back, and I hope everybody had a meaningful Pesach. We're really continuing the process of Pesach now. We're not finished. Right, we start counting the Omer. That's when the first barley is harvested. You put in a whole winter to preparing and working the ground, then you're harvesting it. But are you home yet? After harvesting it, you don't sit down to eat it. There's still work to do, right? On Pesach we were harvested, but now there's work that needs to be done in order for us to be really ready for Hashem on Shavuot. That's what Sfira is about. So we're going to do some of that work. So we're going to begin the second Perek. That's Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Right in the middle of the Amud, you can't really miss it, right? Haya Kaile. Okay? Gemara? Okay? I didn't mean to. Okay. In the first parak we were discussing Kriyat Shema the whole time, but we didn't really get into Kriyat Shema itself. We discussed when, how many times a day, but we did not actually deal with saying Kriyat Shema. That is the subject of our parak now. We figured out exactly when, we figured out how many times in the day, at which times, and now in this coming parak, we're going to start focusing more, zeroing in on Kriyat Shema itself. This is going to be very fundamental, as we'll see, because Kriyat Shema is one of the most fundamental mitzvahs we have, to the extent that we know that the greatest mitzvah of all is Torah learning. Chazal almost equate the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema with Torah learning. We're going to discuss that. But now we're actually getting into the Kriyat Shema itself. So let's see. Haya Koyre Bat Torah. A person is up early, he's learning in the Torah, and he's learning Chumash. V'igia Zman HaMikra. The Zman for Kriyat Shema comes, and he happens to be reading those parshas, but he's in the middle of, he's not davening, he's not thinking about Kriyat Shema, he's learning Chumash. So, and then all of a sudden he says, oh wow, these are the parshas of Kriyat Shema. So, upon realizing that, was he yotze the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema? He said it not even realizing. So, im kiven liboy, if he had in mind, if he read Kriyat Shema with that specific intent, now I am performing the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema, yotze. He was yotze. Which seems to me, meanwhile, that if a person read it, was reading Parshas Vayeschanan, he read Shema Ve'ahavta V'hayam Shemaya, and all of a sudden afterwards he realized, hey, I said Kriyat Shema. The implication of the Mishnah is that he did not fulfill the mitzvah. You must do it with the realization that now, and intent, that now I am performing the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. We'll discuss that in the Gemara. I'm sorry? That's in the communal Kriyas HaTorah. But a person might be learning Chumash on his own. Right? That's really what we're talking about here. A person's learning Chumash on his own. Rabbi Avraham is asking a very good question. The guy is learning Chumash, and he goes through Vayeschanan, and he says, oh, was I yotze Kriyat Shema? Rabbi Avraham is asking, 1 minute, aren't there brachas he's supposed to say before Kriyat Shema? What about Yotzer Ar? What about Avarabah? So, you know, ask this question, not the Achrayinim, not the Rishayinim, Yerushalmi. The Gemara Yerushalmi asks this question. What happened to the brachas? And Yerushalmi infers, apparently, the brachas are not essential to the mitzvah. Meaning, you see that you can be yotze to the mitzvah without reciting the brachas. Now, this doesn't mean you can skip the brachas. We discussed this in the first parak. You certainly have to recite the brachas. But the brachas are a separate, independent obligation. And Kriyat Shema is independent of them. That's right. Kriyat Shema does not depend on the brachas. It's a separate chiyuv. Okay, now, next subject. The famous subject of hepsik, interrupting or speaking in the middle of Kriyat Shema. So what the Mishnah is going to tell us sounds a lot more liberal than what we actually do in practice. But let's see. Beprakim. If a person is in between the chapters of Kriyat Shema, meaning he's not right in the middle of the section, Shoyel mipnei hakavod u'mneishim. You can greet somebody who you're obligated to respect. Meaning you can't just greet anybody if you're in the middle of Kriyat Shema. But if somebody shows up that you're obligated to respect, let's say a person who's older than you, an older man, comes in, if you're in between chapters, you can greet him. And if he greets you, you can respond. Ube'entza, if you're actually in the middle of the perek, let's say in the middle of Ve'ahavta, so you can't greet even a person you're obligated to respect. Shoyel mipnei hayira. The only person you can greet is a person you're afraid of. Then him you can greet. Umeishim. And if he greets you, you can respond to him. So basically what we're saying is that there are two levels. In between the chapters, we'll see exactly what is defined as in between the chapters, but in between the chapters is a bit more lenient than even just the person you need to be respecting you can greet. In middle of the chapters is a bit more stringent, then respect does not warrant interrupting Kriyat Shema. We get you a Gemara? Look at my boy. But fear does warrant, even in the middle, mamish in the middle, fear warrants interrupting and even greeting the person who you're afraid of. Even with the brothers. Talking about mamish in the middle of chakras.
How about without the brothers?
Does it make a difference?
Meaning
to be yoy to the mitzvah. If you're saying Shema, let's say you're going to a later minyan. You're saying Shema before. Same thing. Same thing. You're not allowed to interrupt without reason when you're in the middle of saying Shema. Now, Dibra Meir, that's the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Now let's just define this for a minute. We said that if you're actually in the middle of a perek, you can interrupt for someone you're afraid of. What does that mean? The class bully? So basically that's what Rashi says. Rashi says if it's someone who can kill you, you're afraid, this is let's say a king, or even not a king, someone who can kill you and might do so, you can interrupt. And you can greet him in the middle of Kriyat Shema. Taisa says, 1 minute. We have a very famous principle. Pikuach nefesh, if your life is in danger, you can do any aveira. We don't need a Mishnah to tell us that you can greet someone if you're afraid he's going to kill you. But Taisa says, no, afraid doesn't mean physically afraid. The guy might beat you up or kill you. Afraid means a person you have a mitzvah to be afraid of. Like a parent or your Rebbe, Talmud Chacham. Such a person who you're obligated to treat with awe, right? Fear in this sense is not really the right word. But awe. When you have a chiyuv to treat someone with awe, yes, you are allowed to interrupt right smack in the middle of Kriyat Shema and greet them or respond to their greeting.
But if Shema is the declaration of Hashem is here, and there's nothing else, then who are you giving credit to? So it's like a great desire.
What gives you the right? You're in the middle of talking to Hashem. Who do you respect and revere and fear more than Hashem? What gives you the right to turn away from him and greet other people? So the truth is, what's that? Oh, so Rabbi Yitzchak is saying Avraham Avinu. We do find such a precedent. Avraham Avinu told Hashem, hold on, there are people that I need to greet. But that is not completely a basis for this, because Avraham Avinu is a bit different. Avraham Avinu was not in the middle of performing a mitzvah for Hashem. Avraham Avinu was receiving reward. Hashem was awarding his righteousness by visiting him with Nevuah. Therefore, Avraham Avinu said, Avraham Avinu was in Olam Haba at that time. When a person gets Nevuah, that's Gan Eden. So Avraham Avinu said, I'm going to step out of Gan Eden now in order to do another mitzvah. But when a person is actually saying Kriyat Shema, what basis is there to interrupt and That's other people. One minute, one thing at a time. One thing at a time. What? Oh, so that's if it's pikuach nefesh, fine. But when it's not pikuach nefesh, right? Let's say father or a rebbe. So this also Yerushalmi is. Tosis cites these Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says that Hashem Himself told you to do that. Listen to this. In the after you say v'dibart abam, you shall speak in them. We normally understand that to mean, simply understood that means, you should speak of these things all the time. But you know what Yerushalmi says? Yerushalmi says, you can speak in them, meaning you can speak in the middle of Kriyat Shema. That's how Yerushalmi construes it. Meaning, this, what the Mishnah is describing. If you're greeted by someone who you're obligated to respect or fear, Hashem says, it's okay. You can stop, you can speak, and greet them. Rabbi Yaakov is asking if fear means your father and your Rebbe. So he said that there are two levels. There's a person you have to fear, him you can interrupt for even in the middle of the parrot. Then there are others that you don't have to fear, but you have to respect them. But then you interrupt in between probably. Now once fear includes your father, your Rebbe, etc., etc., who's left to respect? But the answer is that no. First of all, the place can say a couple of interesting things. First of all, one simple example is an older man. You have no obligation to fear an older man like you have to, like you do your father or your Rebbe, but you have to respect him. So an older man, you cannot inter. An older man comes in the middle of Kriyat Shema. If you're in the middle of the parrot, you cannot interrupt and greet him, but in between you can. Now listen to this. A wealthy man. The Torah respects wealthy men. This also is a person who we say it's appropriate to treat him with respect, not to fear him. Sometimes people start fearing wealthy people. That's a problem. That's like what you said before. Might border on Avodah Zarah. But to respect the wealthy man, that also the place can say yes, in between the prakim, interrupt, and greet him. Or even any person who knows more than you. Might not be quite on the level of your Rebbe that you're obligated to fear him, but any person that knows more than you, is a bigger Talmud Chacham than you, you should treat with respect. And therefore, you would not interrupt in the middle of a parak, but you can interrupt in between parakim. Okay. So that's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda is a little bit more lenient. Rabbi Yehuda says as follows. Ba'enta, in the middle of a perek, right in the middle of the Ohavta, Shoyel Mipnei Hayira, you can greet someone whom you fear, Umeshiv Mipnei HaKavod, and you can respond to a person who you respect. Meaning Rabbi Meir said, now in the middle, you only relate to people who you fear. You greet them and you respond only to them. Respect, he's got to wait until the end of the parak. Rabbi Yehuda says, you greet only a person who you have to fear in the middle of a parak, but you can respond to anybody who you're supposed to respect. Obekrokim, and in between the chapters, Shoyel Mipnei HaKavod, you can greet someone who you're obligated to respect. Umeshiv Shalom Lechol Adam. But you can respond to the greeting of any person. Anybody greets you in between chapters, you can respond. Now this, essentially, this is the halacha. Now, this certainly, does this mean that forget about all the signs about not talking in shul? Take them all down. Because, yeah, you can respond. People greet you, and you can even greet people. You respect a little bit. Right? The rich guy on the block, when he comes in late to shul, because he thinks everybody needs to respect him, and you're in the middle of Shema, greet him. So the place can say that in practice, in an area or in circumstances where everybody understands that you're davening now, you should not greet people. Meaning, the situation was, earlier times, let's say you're on the road or something like that, you weren't in shul. We've already seen earlier that in the first parak, shul, the fact that we go to shul every day is a spiritual luxury. Not everybody had that luxury in earlier times. and people were often davening by themselves, this was more relevant. But when the circumstances are such that everybody knows that this is a shul and people are davening now, and therefore people are not busy greeting other people, you should not greet other people, even a person you're obligated to respect or fear, because everybody knows that now it's davening time and that this is what you're doing. So practically speaking, we would not put this into practice. But it's still important to know the essential halacha, because we'll see, not today, but we'll see that there are a lot of very interesting halachic implications that are still relevant today. All kinds of things based on these principles that you might interrupt for. For example, what happens if a halachic question comes up in the middle of davening? Can you ask the Rav? I'm not going to answer that yet. We'll see. I'm going to leave it for later in the Gemara. Or, what about answering Kaddish or Kedusha? The Gemara doesn't discuss that. But the place can base it on these halachas. If you can respond to someone you're supposed to respect, you can respond to Kaddish and Kedusha as well. We'll see. There are a lot of very practical implications of this, even though the classic implication that the Mishnah is discussing, that you can greet a person you respect, does not apply practically. Okay. Now, Elohim Bein HaPrakim. What is defined as between the chapters? So, Bein Bracha Rishoyna Lishniya. Between the first and second Bracha. That is between Yotzer Or and Avarabo. Okay, after Yotzer Amoyeris. Can we get you a Gemara? Bein Bracha Shniya Lishma. Between the second Bracha and Shema. Bein Shema Levahayim Shemaya. Shema and Gahavta, by the way, are just one parak. We interact in the Siddur, it's separate because he got Baruch Shem in the middle. But it's really just one parak. But between Shema and Gahavta is one parak. Between that and Vahayim Shemaya. Bein Vahayim Shemaya Levahayimer. Also, after Vayim Shemaya, before you start Vayimer, that is a stopping point. Bein Vayimer le'emes v'yatzi. After Vayimer, you say, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, that's the end of Shema. Emes v'yatzi is already a new tefillah. It's the next bracha. That's a stopping point. Right? That certainly doesn't sound familiar. We say, Hashem Elokeichem emes. Emes is already the beginning of v'yatzi. So let's see. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Bein Vayomer le'emes v'yatziv lo yapsiv." No, do not interrupt between Vayomer and Emes v'yatziv. Meaning, go straight from Vayomer into Emes v'yatziv without stopping. That explains what we do, right? Hashem Elokeichem Emes. We do it to such an extent that people mistakenly think that the word Emes is actually part of Shema. But really, what it is fulfilling what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Go straight from Shema into the next bracha. Ani Hashem Elokeichem Emes. Already started the next bracha. Why he says this? Why should this be different than the other brachas? We'll wait for the Gemara. We'll see. Okay. Now, Amar Rabbi Yishua ben Kalcha. Yishua ben Kalcha said, Lama kodma parsha Shema Levahayim Shemaya. Why do we recite Shema before Vahayim Shemaya? And this really is going to give us a lot of insight into what Kriya Shema is about. Why do we recite Shema before Vahayim Shemaya? Kedei sheyekabel olav kol malchus shamayim tchila, so that you first accept upon yourself the rulership of Hashem. Afterwards, you accept upon yourself Hashem's commandments. But Nach is asking, what's the Havamina? I mean, what are you asking? The Nach is asking, why is the Mishnah bothered? What's the reason for the order? You can only say one thing at a time. One thing has to come before the other. But ask your question a little stronger. The reason why we say Shema and then Vahaya is because in the Torah you have Shema and then afterwards Vayim Shemaya. Shema is in Beis Chanan. Oh, that's true. That's right. Shema is in Beis Chanan. Vayomer is in Ekev. But the truth is that Vayomer is back in Shlach. So the truth is that the Mepharshim say that no, we do need a reason. The fact that one comes before the other in the Torah, it's not a reason to recite that one before the other, because we know that the Torah is not organized in any chronological order. Meaning, you might have things, one thing before the other, even though it really should be coming afterwards. When Chazal are coming to establish what's the order in which we should daven, they put a lot of thought into structuring the davening. And therefore, we know that there is significance to every word and everything that they set up. And therefore, yes, we're asking, what is the significance of saying first Shema and Ve'ahavta, then saying V'haya, and then, like you pointed out, backing up to Shlach and saying Vayomer? So the answer is, Shema, this is really what the essence of Kriya Shema is. Shema is accepting upon yourself the rulership of Hashem. Es Shema and Ve'ahavta. We'll have to elaborate on that, but first let's see what the Mishnah says. The Hayam Shamaya is the next step. After you have accepted Hashem as king, now you commit yourself to his commandments. That's what the Hayam Shamaya is about, right? Hayam Shamaya is all about, you better listen to Hashem's commandments, etc. You are acknowledging and accepting that yes, Hashem has expectations of you. Okay? Vahayam Shamaya li Vayomer. Why does Vahayam Shamaya come before Vayomer? Now, here, like we said, the question is even more highlighted because Vayomer is actually way before it in the Torah. Shevahayim Shamaya noyeg bein Vayom bein balaylo. Vayom Shamaya is applicable both during the day and at night. Vayom Shamaya, first of all, is about the mitzvahs in general, right? It's talking about listening to all of Hashem's mitzvahs. And more specifically, it addresses learning Torah, Rashi. At the end of the part, right? The Limata Moisam is Benechem. It's a mitzvah of learning Torah. This certainly applies in day and night. Vayomer, einoyeg ela b'yom bilvav. Whereas, the parsha of Vayomer, what's that mitzvah? Tzitzis. Tzitzis is only applicable during the day. Okay, so there's a couple of things to note here. First of all, let's note this. That the Mishnah here is defining the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. The essence of the mitzvah of Kriya Shema is that morning and evening you are supposed to consciously submit yourself to Hashem's rule. That's what Shema is. So you have to understand, it's not a tefillah. Right? This, we've discussed this a few times in the past. We just kind of bunch all of davening is basically one idea. No, it's not. It's not a tefillah. Who are you talking to when you're saying Kriya Shema? You're talking to yourself. You are knocking into your own head a message. And that is Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That's what Kriya Shema is about. So, you have to go about this consciously. It's not recitation. It always makes me nuts when, even though I use the term myself, but to talk about reciting Kriya Shema. Like reciting Kriya Shema sounds like reciting poetry. It's like, you say it, you rattle it off. That's not what it is. Kriya Shema is consciously accepting Hashem as King. Then, after you've done that, you move on to the next stage. Vayom Shamaya. Hashem is King. Okay, that's very nice. We have many people who are very spiritual, and they love the idea of Hashem and all that, but you can't get them off the couch. So the next stage is Vayom Shamaya. Hashem has very tangible expectations. He wants action. He wants mitzvahs. That's the next step. Now, after that, okay. Seems kind of technical. Vayom Shamaya is mitzvahs, which apply all the time. Vayomer applies only in the day, and therefore it's less. But here also, true to form, the Maharal gives a little bit of a deeper take on this. He says, Vayom Shamaya is not really talking about performance of mitzvahs. Talking about commitment to mitzvahs. Whereas Vayomer is talking about actually physically performing a mitzvah. The way Maharal sets it up is, tzitzis is representative of physical performance of mitzvahs. Whereas Vayom Shamaya is committing to the mitzvahs in a theoretical way. Now let's understand what he's saying here. So he says as follows. When you commit to the mitzvahs, a person, you consider yourself bound by mitzvahs? Sure. When are you mainly performing mitzvahs? During the day. At night you're in bed, you're sleeping, you're not doing mitzvahs at night. You're doing mitzvahs during the day. But, when are you committed to mitzvahs? You're committed to mitzvahs 24/7. You don't stop being a Jew when you go to sleep. That's what the Mishnah means. The commitment to mitzvahs is around the clock. Even when you're asleep, you are a Jew who's committed to mitzvahs. Therefore, Bayan Shemaya, which is the commitment to mitzvahs, applies around the clock. Tzitzis represents performing mitzvahs. Performing mitzvahs is done primarily during the day. The day you're up, that's when you do mitzvahs. Now there's a very, very profound message here. Let's understand this. There's a mitzvah in itself. There's a mitzvah in itself to commit to perform all of Hashem's mitzvahs. Now what does this mean? The Chodesh HaVavis says something that seems weird. The Chodesh HaVavis says, in the beginning, in his preface to his fundamental sefer, he's trying to prove how the main area of serving Hashem is in the mind and heart. You have to develop the right feelings for Hashem. You have to develop passionate feelings for Hashem. Love of Hashem. Fear of Hashem. Awareness of Hashem. And he says that it's obvious that that's really the main point of it all. And he says, because it must be that the inner mitzvahs, meaning the mitzvahs of the heart, are the basis for all the rest of the mitzvahs. Because if Hashem tells you to do mitzvahs, physical mitzvahs, obviously you can't do mitzvahs if you don't want to do them. So obviously, first you need to want to. That's an inner issue, right? That's about the heart. Then Hashem can command you to do physical mitzvahs. In other words, what he's saying is, you can't really do the mitzvahs if you don't have the inner feelings in place. Because you can only do the mitzvahs if you want to. Now that's very strange, because he's talking about really developing passionate love, intense fear of Hashem, passionate love for Hashem, intense sensory awareness of Hashem. And he says, without that you can't do mitzvahs. What does that mean? Don't we see around us all the time, you have plenty of Jews who are observant, they're doing mitzvahs, and they're cool Jews. They're part of the Jews. They're not so passionate. They don't have such deep feelings about it. And yet, they observe the mitzvahs like everybody else. So the truth is that the Chodesh HaLovitz is saying something more profound, which is being expressed here. Take a Jew who's not passionate about Judaism. Kind of, he grew up Jewish. He does the mitzvahs by rote. And he seems to be the refutation of the Chodesh HaLovitz's claim that you have to be passionate about Judaism in order to do mitzvahs. Now, we ask, is it really true? Can you have a person who's cool about Judaism and really performs mitzvahs? The answer is, the superficial level, the everyday automatic things, sure he can do. He can put on tefillin by rote, can daven three times a day, keeps kashrus, keeps Shabbos, fine. But what's going to happen when the going gets rough? When the going gets rough, right? Is such a person who's not passionate about his Judaism, a person who's not well connected to Hashem, when the going gets rough, is he really going to be there? Meaning, for example, is such a person really capable? I'll give a simple example of when the going gets rough. You're sitting around with the guys, you're sitting at a family gathering, right? And your brother-in-law starts discussing something that borders too much on Lashon Hara. Okay? Most Jews who live on autopilot won't respond. They might even enjoy it, because autopilot Judaism doesn't really include this level of really being meticulous about the fine details of Lashon Hara. That already requires a level of commitment that you have to develop yourself. It doesn't come by just being born from. You have to work on it. Are you going to be able to speak up and say, My dear brother-in-law, you shouldn't be saying that. Let's change the subject. Most people will feel funny about it. But that's what you're required to do. That's what you're required to do. You have to find the right way to say it, but you have to. It's going to take a more conscientious guy, a person who's a bit more spiritually developed, to be able to do it. Or, take a little bit more of a drastic example. You're at home on Shabbos. And the Shabbos candle tips over. It catches the edge of the tablecloth. There's a tiny flame at the edge of the tablecloth. Now, you're the only one in the house. There's no one else in the vicinity. There's no pikuach nefesh involved, okay? Usually, practically speaking, anytime there's a fire in a house, it's pikuach nefesh. Don't think too much, just put it out. But, let's say the situation is such, you have a house, you have an ivory tower. Not an ivory tower. But you have a house built in the middle of a parking lot, a wooden house. But in the middle of a parking lot, there's nothing else around. You're the only one, you can get out easily. There's a tiny fire at the edge of the tablecloth. Now you have two choices. You get up and leave the house, and your entire house with all your belongings will burn down. Or, before you think too much, you kind of knock the pitcher of water after the candle. Afterwards, you wonder if it's the right thing to do. Or, especially if you're a lamdan, and you know that really extinguishing a fire in this way is only derabbanan. Okay? So you're facing a situation of, I can just quickly, it's a tiny little fire. It's not even like, doesn't seem so serious. Tiny little fire, I can quickly brush an elbow over it. Or, I can step back, watch my house burn down, and know that now I have years of poverty ahead of me. Which is it going to be? That depends how committed you are. That depends how much you developed your inner feelings to Judaism. Right? It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be an easy thing to do. But that's what you're required to do. Yes, it's the Rabbanan. But that's what you're required to do.
Ground keyboard.
What?
Ground keyboard.
What's that?
Ground keyboard.
Oh, there are tricks. Well, let's say none of them are available. In the case where none, the only out is quickly doing it. Right? Before it's a big, it's not such a big flame. Right? So, here's where it's really going to depend. Have you been previously developing passion? Have you been developing deeper feelings for Judaism? Are you well connected with Hashem? Do you appreciate what Hashem is about? Otherwise, you're going to have a hard time. Here's what the Chavos HaLevavos is saying. Sure, you want to observe Judaism, like you want to be a, what do they call them? A tuna and bagels Jew? What do they call them? Lox and bagels Jew, right? Is there such an expression? Not for this father, but for the Ashkenazim among us. Lox and bagels Jew, right? That you can do without much deeper feeling. But you really have to develop a deeper sense of commitment. If you want to be able to say, I am committed today to the full gamut of what Judaism requires of me, that means that today you have to be ready to face any of these situations successfully. Now, that's what's required of you. We say, 1 minute, there's two levels here. First, you have to be committed to Hashem's mitzvahs. Being committed to Hashem's mitzvahs, that requires being in position today to be able to, yes, to throw out everything you own for Hashem. Then there's the next level, actually performing them, but that's another level. The Chavos HaLevavos presents this as a mitzvah in and of itself. You are obligated to be committed to all of Hashem's mitzvahs, which means that don't wait for it to come down to it and then see, oh, will I overcome the test or not? Today, you have to be able, you have to be in position, meaning you have to have your insides developed. You have to have your connection with Hashem developed to the extent that you will be able to withstand any situation that comes your way that Halacha will require of you, things that are not so easy. And therefore, this is what the Maharal is saying. There are two levels here. First of all, V'hayon Shemaya. You acknowledge that Hashem is King. Now, are you fully committed to doing everything that He expects? And Hashem expects more than just, yeah, put on your tefillin and keep basic kashrus and Shabbos, etc. No, Hashem wants to know, will you be loyal to me in this situation, in this situation, in this situation? In order to be able to do all that, you have to develop a very deep sense of commitment. Then is the next level. Do the mitzvahs. When they come up, do them. We'll see when we get more into Shema that the Rashba says, and this is cited by the Poskim, when a person is saying, go after Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol ma'idecha, when you say that we should love Hashem with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our might, what does with all our soul mean? Chazal tell us, even if you have to give up your life. So the Rashba says, when you're saying that, that means that you have to actually commit yourself to doing that. Meaning, picture this scene. Picture the scene of being faced with a choice. Are you ready to give up your life for Hashem? And when you say b'chol levavcha, commit to that. So yes, there are two levels. There's the commitment and there's the actual performance. Most of us, in most of our lives, the performance will be easier than the commitment. But the commitment requires of us to be in position to be able to do whatever it takes in whatever circumstances Hashem will demand it of us. So that's what the Maharal is saying. There are two things here. Vayam Shemaya is, I'm committing to Hashem's mitzvahs. That's something that obligates you 24/7. The next step is performance. Performance? Yeah, that's basically during the day. At the end of the day, performance, usually it won't come down to those things. That's the next level. That's Vayoyma. Now, Rabbi Yaakov is asking, when we're talking about accepting Hashem's rulership and committing to His service, we say that you have to commit yourself. The Torah expresses that by saying you should love Hashem with all your heart, all your soul, etc. Shouldn't the Torah say you should fear Hashem or you should serve Hashem with all your heart, etc., etc.? The truth is, let's note, this is very, very fundamental. We're going to get to this more in detail, but we'll note now already that the truth is that the primary element of our relationship with Hashem is love. The fear and everything else, meaning, yes, for us reaching a level of love of Hashem is a high madrega. But we have to realize that first and foremost, our relationship with Hashem is one of love. Meaning, also Hashem's dynamics with us. All of Hashem's expectations of us are because He loves us. The main element of our whole relationship with Hashem is love. Now we may take a lot of work on our part to reach that level of love. But you have to realize that that's the main nature of our relationship with Hashem. From Hashem to us, that's the main thing that's being given off all the time. Right? People think that it's mainly about Yira. Yira has to be understood. Yira is also really, on a proper level, fear of Hashem is also in the framework of our love of Hashem. But we're not going to elaborate on that right now. Looking to get to it more, Bez Hashem, as we get more into the details of Kriya Shema.
Isn't it more accurate to say that the first pasuk is more about the Olam Chuch Shemayim, and the Afa is a commitment on the individual, and the Hayah is a commitment on the community? So they're both commitments.
It's true that the Afa is about the individual, whereas the Hayah Shemayah is about the community. But the Afta is not getting so much into the mitzvahs per se. It's really talking about, in a very general way, right? It doesn't talk about mitzvahs at all. There's some specific mitzvahs I mentioned at the end of the parasha. But it's not telling you, fulfill Hashem's mitzvahs with all of your heart and soul. Your relationship with Hashem, you should dedicate your whole soul and heart to. That's really an aspect of accepting Hashem's kingship. Okay. Now just two more points before we consider ourselves finished with the Mishnah. And this also I just want to bring home. Once we mention the Maharal, it's properly understood. The Maharal said that really Vayomer is representative of physical performance of the mitzvahs. Meaning the mitzvah of tzitzis is really representative of physical performance. Why? Why is that the example? Why is that what characterizes physical performance of the mitzvahs? So the answer is that really, man, the Jew, is mainly not a physical being. Our physical actions is the lowest level of our relationship with Hashem. And the truth is, it's like we said before, even more important than actually doing the mitzvahs is that sense of commitment to the mitzvahs that we feel. The sense of commitment is in our personality. That's more important to Hashem. It's more important to Hashem that in our hearts and minds we're dedicated to Him than actually doing it. Doing it is a way of just putting your money where your mouth is. Right? But it's more important to Hashem that you feel like you're ready to give your life up to Him than you actually do. Just sometimes Hashem says, I want you to do it to show that you really feel that way. So, really, the main Jew is his neshama. The main Jew is his insides, your heart, your mind, etc. The body is just the vehicle of expressing all that. So, the vehicle of expressing your inner feelings of Hashem. Every mitzvah is really just supposed to be an expression of what you feel about Hashem. Okay? So now, tzitzis, what's tzitzis? Tzitzis are strings that you wear on your garment. What is a garment? A garment is really expressing the superficiality of man. Right? We wear garments only because we're physical. And we have to hide what looks like a beastly body. And man, naked, looks like a bald gorilla. So, we wear clothing to hide the fact that we're so physical. Right? Now, therefore, Hashem says, I want you to wear on your clothing tzitzis. What are tzitzis? Tzitzis is to help us remember that we're not just body. Right? You're not just 180 pounds of meat. That's what the rest of the world is. You are connected to much higher places. The tzitzis is supposed to be, really, we're supposed to have one string of tcheles. Tcheles is that blue wool. What's the idea of the blue wool? Tcheles is supposed to remind you of the sea, which should remind you of the sky, which should remind you of the Kisei HaKov. I'll just start in parentheses. Sometimes people ask, and it seems a little remote. You look at this blue string and you automatically make all that association. It seems a little strange. So someone asked Rav Eli Lapian this question. So Rav Eli Lapian said, yeah, I really don't understand this halacha. There's also another halacha that I don't so much understand. There's halacha that you should not analyze, you shouldn't stare at a woman's clothing, even if she's not wearing it right now, because it might get your thoughts going, right? He said, I don't understand that either. Looking at a woman's garment is going to get you going? Is that really so? So the guy said, well, that I actually do understand. That's pretty realistic. So Rabbi Lapian said, oh, okay. So apparently the associations work depending on what level you're on. For you, yeah, looking at a woman's garment can bring you to the woman. So you're supposed to bring yourself to a level that looking at the tzitzis can bring you to the Kisei HaKov. Okay, that's in parentheses. But whatever it is, the idea is, why tzitzis? Tzitzis, the idea is, it's showing you that actually, you're connected to a higher place. Those are the strings. Strings are connecting you to a higher place. You're physical, you're wearing clothing, but yet, you have that string of tcheles, which actually brings you, connects you on high. You're not just an earthly being. Yeah, that tcheles on you because you're actually a divine being. So like we've mentioned many times, the body that you know when you look in the mirror, the Chaim Volozhiner says, is really the shoe of who you really are. We don't appreciate who we really are. We don't appreciate what it means to be a neshama. That's who we are. So we wear the tzitzis on our clothing, which is just due to the fact that we're physical, just to remember all the time, no, you're not just a pile of meat. You are actually connected to much higher places. Sorry? Okay, we'll get to that. So, therefore, the mitzvah tzitzis is what represents the physicality, right? It's the physical angle of being a servant of Hashem. And that's why the Maharal says it represents, in a general way, physical performance of mitzvahs. Now, it's for that very reason that it only applies during the day. Because, like we said, in a general way, the time of our activity is during the day. So the fact that the mitzvah of tzitzis is only relevant during the day is expressing the mitzvah of tzitzis represents our time of activity. Right? That's when we're physical. That's when we're busy doing things physically. Who we are is 24/7. But the tzitzis is only necessary because you might be fooled. You have a physical body. You might start to think that I begin with my head and end with my toes. That's what the tzitzis are there for. So the tzitzis are really there to counter that physical impression that we might have of ourselves. What's that? The bris mila? That's true. But just it's kind of difficult to make that apply only during the day and not at night. But actually the performance of the mitzvah of bris mila is also only during the day. Right? But we wear the mila 24/7. Okay. Now, fine. We go back to the beginning of the Mishnah. We're going to begin the Gemara. The Mishnah had said, a person is learning Chumash, and he hits Kriya Shema. Is the Kriya Shema that he reads in the course of learning Chumash, can that count as the mitzvah? And the Mishnah said, well, if he had intent, it counts. Now, Shema Mino, the Gemara says, this implies that mitzvah is tzrichos kavanah, that mitzvahs require intent. Meaning, this is a fundamental question in other areas of Shas. Just one second. Other areas of Shas. If a person did a mitzvah without intending to do the mitzvah, Pesach night, sat down, he's hungry, he sits down for a sandwich, oh no, bread in the house, he'll have some matzah. He eats matzah, and afterwards he says, oh, I'm full, I don't have room for anything else. He's ready to start the Seder. Oh, was I yoyte the mitzvah of matzah with the peanut butter sandwich that I ate? So that's this question. In order to fulfill a mitzvah, in order to be yoyte the mitzvah, must you have intent? Well, that's because we paskin that you do have to have intent. But there are two opinions in the Gemara. According to the opinion that you don't have to have intent, if you pick up that lulav, right, just in order to move it from one place to the other, you are yaitzah, that's it. So now, our Mishnah seems to imply that you have to have intent, because why do you have to intend? You are eating Chumash, afterwards you realize that you said Kriya Shema, okay, you are yaitzah. So, are we to conclude that? Shema mina mitzvah tzrichas kavana. This seems to imply that yes, a mitzvah requires intent in order to be yaitzah. So the Gemara says, no, you don't have to intend to fulfill the mitzvah. Ma'im kiven liboy, what do we mean when we say, if you had intent, likros? It means if you meant to read, that's all it means. You don't have to intend to fulfill the mitzvah. All you have to intend is to read. If you intended to read, you're yaitzah. Oh, good question about Rabbi Yosef is asking. What's that supposed to mean if you intend to read? What were you doing? What, you were reading by accident? What were you doing? So the Gemara says, Likrois. What? If you're reading a Chumash, and you're only yoytzer the mitzvah if you intend to read. Hakakari. He is reading. Of course he intends to read. What? I'm sorry? Oh, so let's see. So the Gemara answers, Bekairei lahagia. No. We're not talking about a person who's learning Chumash. We're talking about a person who's actually proofreading a Sefer Torah. That's what he's doing. Like, it's kind of like what you said. He's editing a Sefer Torah. And he's reading just kind of half unconsciously. He's not really engaged in reading. He's editing. He happens to be articulating the words as he goes on. But he doesn't really have intent to be reading per se. It's a mindless kind of thing. That, we say, that's certainly no good. You have to at least intend to be doing the action. You might not have to intend to be yoytzer to the mitzvah, but you have to intend to read. If the mitzvah is to read, you have to intend to read. To read unconsciously, to read inadvertently, certainly is no good. But that doesn't mean that you have to intend to be yoytzer to the mitzvah. As long as you intended to read, that's good enough, even if you didn't intend to do the mitzvah. So just proofreading and kind of unconsciously articulating the words is not good enough. But once you actually intended, no, I want to read this now, consciously, you can be yaitze, even though you are not intending to actually fulfill the mitzvah. What were you going to ask? Okay. So that's what our Gemara concludes. So you cannot deduce from our Mishnah that mitzvahs require intent. However, like you pointed out, the halacha lemaisa is that yes, mitzvahs do require intent in order to fulfill them, and we'll elaborate on that bli neder a bit more next time.